We are talking about motivating people. And motivation can be provided not only through monetary means, by way of incentive, not only through administrative ways, like authority, for example, hence the last two lectures about authority in employment relationship and delegation of authority, the costs and benefits of it. I hope that that provoked some interest. But there is another very important way in which people can be motivated, and that's by means of leadership. So what's the difference between leadership and authority? Do you know this guy? Right? This is Mohandas Gandhi, or many people call him Mahatma Gandhi, right? So does he look like a figure of authority? Is he a minister, a general, a president, a CEO? Does he look like the director to you? Yeah? No. No. Does he look like a leader to you? Yeah? Why does he look like a leader to you? Knowledge is important, but it doesn't make you... I mean, I have a lot of knowledge. Do I look like a leader? I don't think so. Right? If I looked like a leader, then you would spend more time studying personnel economics, right? And reading the slides before the lecture, for example. But so, of course, knowledge is important for leadership, and we're going to mention it earlier on in the lecture, right? There was a movie about him some years ago. Maybe you watched it. It's a biopic about Gandhi. My favorite scene from this movie, that's why I wanted to feature this guy as part of the lecture. My favorite scene in this movie is like this. So imagine India, 1930s or so, right? So it's kind of before the collapse of the British Empire, before the disintegration of the British Empire, India was part of the British Empire. Well, it was interesting, right? So you can talk about, say, you can identify several themes in this whole story. You know, one would be colonial oppression, another one would be kind of an attempt to civilize the place, another would be, you know, infrastructure investments and involvement of large number of people in trade relationship that were facilitated by the empire. So, but these broad discourses aside, my favorite scene in this movie was like this. So the British government, in order to finance its operations, the British government imposed a tax on salt. From the public economics perspective, a tax on salt is actually a good idea. Why is it a good idea? What should you tax from the economics perspective? So actually, the lower the demand elasticity with respect to price, the more you should tax this stuff, right? You need salt. You cannot not consume salt, otherwise you'll drop dead. Even animals need salt. You know, they have these salt briquettes, you know, for the cows and wild animals, right? So human beings, they need a certain amount of salt. They can't live without it. So the elasticity of demand for salt with respect to price is close to zero. So let's tax the hell out of salt. To produce salt costs next to nothing, but the price was substantial, right? So all the governments at all times, starting from the Roman Empire, taxed salt. And the British government in India was no exception. So what he did, he went to the sea. He went to the seashore and basically got a lot of seawater and let it evaporate. And the residue was basically salt. And he said, look, so you can get salt for free. Right? He wasn't the minister, he wasn't the general, he wasn't, you know, a chair of Council of Economic Advisors. He was just a lawyer, and sort of half-employed lawyer, because of his issues with the British government. You know, he showed the way, he led by example. He said, look, why do you have to pay exorbitant taxes for salt to the British government who oppresses you? Here's, help yourself, you know, the sea is free for everyone, you don't have to pay for salt. And finance the oppressive British government in the process. For that, he was jailed. That was a classical example of leadership versus authority. So what's the difference between leadership and authority? Authority is about command and control, right? So you have a mandate according to some kind of contract that you willingly or not willingly sign. Right, so you kind of sign a contract with the government that police have the right to detain you on the street and impose fines for non-compliance with administrative law. You may or may not agree with this, but you kind of in by virtue of your, you know, being born and in this place and carrying German passport, or by virtue of you residing in this place, right? So it's kind of, you enter into this contract where you surrender your authority to drive over speed limits and behave antisocially, which you might find convenient for yourself in some circumstances, but you cannot, because you submit yourself to the authority of the government. The government does not have to explain itself in commanding and controlling you. Similarly, when you get hired into job, the boss does not have to explain themselves within the realm of authority. I mean, the realm of authority, of course, is defined precisely by the employment contract. Within this realm of authority, the boss does not have to convince you that you should take action X rather than action Y, as long as both actions X and Y are within the realm of authority as determined by your employment contract. Recall the Herbert Simon story. Leaders do not have the formal authority, right? He cannot tell you stop buying salt and funding British government. He's a private citizen. He doesn't have the authority to enforce his admonition. He doesn't have the authority to fire you or impose a fine on you or lock you up in jail for not complying with his advice. So the difference, the fundamental difference between leadership and authority is that leaders do not have a formal mandate. There's no formal contract between leaders and the followers, between people who choose to follow or not to follow the leader's advice. In other words, leadership is informal authority, where instructions are followed voluntarily and there is no enforcement. There's no formal enforcement of compliance. So leaders try to encourage and motivate their followers without recourse to coercion, because they cannot have recourse to coercion. They don't have the mandate for that. And the followers follow. You know, he had a huge following. He was a very, very popular and divisive figure in India. In the end, he was assassinated. But there were hundreds of millions of people who followed him, and still there is a very powerful movement in modern India who hugely respect this man, and I also hugely respect him. He commanded a lot of people, not by force of authority, but by force of his argument and the strength and nobleness of his personal examples. But this lecture is not about how great Mahatma Gandhi was. Winston Churchill, my other personal hero, was, you know Winston Churchill, right? He called him a mad fakir, right? So a mad kind of trickster, right? So these guys, both my personal heroes, but they didn't really like each other. But this aside, let's talk about the economics of leadership, you know? And the key question is, why should people choose to follow leaders, right? I mean, if there is a policeman on the street coming to you and asking you to cross the road and walk on the other side of the street, then you submit to the authority of the policeman on the street, right? But if there is some, you know, Joe Blogs, some person coming to you and saying, look, you have to cross the street and walk on the other side of the road, why would you bother to react? Why would you bother to follow their advice? You know, you can tell them to mind their own business and that would be the end of it. But no, there is leadership. And people follow leaders. And why would people follow leaders? Well, one intuitive answer, and I think you kind of hinted at that, is that leaders are knowledgeable people. They have the knowledge that followers may not possess. Followers choose to react, to follow, on the advice that they believe to be informed by knowledge about the state of affairs that they, the followers, do not necessarily possess. Leaders have a lot of reputation, and you know, so the credibility of their advice is a function of their reputation. If the leader is not serious, right? If Albert Gore, you know Albert Gore? No? One of the early climate activists, he got a Nobel Prize, he got a Nobel Peace Prize. Albert Gore was vice president when Bill Clinton was president of the United States. So we're talking about ancient history from your perspective, right? But from my perspective, it was not so ancient history. So he was one of the early high-level public people who said, guys, you have to really take care of the environment. You should reduce emissions, and And you know, we're talking about late 90s, early noughties, early 2000s, right? So, and you know, since then people kind of started paying attention to the environment. But then, it came out that he had a huge, not very energy efficient mansion, and he traveled business class everywhere, right? So, I mean, and then people kind of started sort of doubting his credentials when it comes to when it came to advice about environment protection. And so leaders have to be credible, and they have to show exemplary behavior that would be consistent with what they preach, right? So hence the saying, you know, practice what you preach in English language, right? And so hence the main economic problem and the main problem of leadership, you know, the main kind of issue in the workings of leadership to advise people and project the expert knowledge to influence people's decisions is the problem of leadership credibility. What if the leader recommends the action that benefit themselves rather than the world or the followers, right? So why is Albert Gore telling you to, you know, to take care of the environment? Why is Greta Thunberg telling you to go and protest against climate change? So these guys are telling you, you know, go and protect the environment. Go and protest against the governments who don't pay enough attention to the problem of climate change. Why are they doing it? Are they doing it because they want the greater good for the entire world? Are they doing it because they care about you and your children and your grandchildren who will have to deal with the consequences of climate change? Or have they kind of found a niche in the public debate that is of interest to many people and that can give them a lot of PR capital, a lot of fame, a lot of recognizability, which could then project them to higher positions at United Nations organization or some European institutions? Or, you know, like in case of Albert Gore, a lot of people will start buying his books and watching his movies about climate change and environment, right? So how do you separate the altruistic motives in leadership behavior from the personal enrichment motives in leadership behavior? That's a fundamental problem. I hope you understand what I'm talking about. How do you know that he wished well to the population of India suppressed by the British colonial government? How do you know that, you know, maybe he had a grudge against the British government who revoked his lawyer's license? You know, maybe he wanted to kind of accumulate recognizability in the Indian society in order to sell his lawyer services at a higher price, you know? So how do you know? That's the problem of credibility. And now, why is this an important economic problem? Because leadership is great, you know? So acting on the advice of a knowledgeable person or institution is great, you know, than acting in the absence of advice. So if you do not take leadership seriously, there's going to be welfare losses. Decisions that are going to be made without leadership are less efficient from the economic point, or from the economic perspective, from the welfare perspective, than the actions and decisions that are influenced by knowledgeable leadership. So to understand what the problem is, consider the following situation. So there's the leader and the follower. Consider this game theory, right? So the follower does not know the state of nature. So the follower does not know how bad the climate change is a problem, or the follower doesn't know how bad the war in Ukraine is as a problem for European security. The follower does not exactly know how bad or how important it is for the welfare of the firm whether a new product should or should not be produced. You know, so state of nature is a kind of abstract concept that reflects the general uncertainty of the situation that people face. And here's the leader. The leader says, I know the state of nature. I know how important climate change is as a problem. I know how the war in Ukraine, how problematic it is for European security. You know, you have to follow me. You have to act on my advice, right? And then the follower has to decide what action to take, to work hard or to work not so hard. If the state of nature is good and the follower works hard, then the follower gets the benefit for. So italicized figures are the follower's payoffs, right? If the state of nature is good, if the climate is really a huge problem, then acting hard towards tackling climate change is going to bring a substantial payoff to the follower. And it's also going to bring a substantial payoff to the leader. So the figures in bold are payoffs to the leader, right? So if the follower is convinced by the leader's message that the state of nature is good and works hard, then these guys get payoffs 5 and 4 respectively. If the follower works hard, but the state of nature is bad, the follower loses, the follower doesn't gain anything, right? So if you kind of, if you start to really, you know, act environmentally, whereas in fact, the state of the nature is such that your action will have absolutely no consequences whatsoever, right? You're going to lose resources, you're going to pay more for energy, you're going to pay more for petrol, you're going to be worse off economically, but your actions are not going to save the environment, right? So then you're going to lose, but Al Gore and Greta Thunberg are going to gain some publicity. See what I mean, right? So if the follower working hard creates a benefit for the leader as well, whether the state of nature is good or bad. Okay? Now, if the state of nature is good and the worker does not follow leader's advice to work hard and works easy, then he gets the payoff 3, right? So if we don't protect the environment when the problem with the environment is really quite huge and existentially threatening us, then okay, I mean, we're going to sort of take it easy in the short to medium run, but in the long run, it's going to be a big boom and the Earth will stop its physical existence, right? So, but for now, we're okay. Now, the leader gets the payoff 2 in this event, and when the state of nature is bad and the worker works doesn't really care, then these are the payoffs, right? These are the payoffs. Tell me, what is the credibility problem here? How is the credibility problem illustrated in this game? To answer this question, tell me, what advice is it for the leader, or what advice to the follower should leader give strategically? What should the leader tell the follower to work hard? Is it conditional or unconditional in the state of nature? Regardless of what we can do about the climate problem, or regardless of how bad the climate problem is. I mean, I personally think the climate problem is serious and we can do something about the climate problem. But who knows? You know, regardless of how bad this situation is, thought leaders in this kind of debate, they have the incentive, they have a personal incentive to encourage followers to act, to work hard, right? And it's not always to the follower's interest, as you can see, right? So is it always in the follower's interest to follow the leader's advice? And the answer is no. Because if the leader tells you that the state of nature is good and you therefore have to work hard, well, that's a lie, but there's no way of checking. But if the leader is lying to you, you're going to lose out. You would have been better off not following the leader's advice, right? See what I mean? But if the leader is not lying, if the leader is an expert and tries to communicate the knowledge, their knowledge of the situation to the followers, then not acting on the leader's advice is also going to be detrimental, right? So if the state of nature is really good, but the follower ignores the leader's advice, the follower is going to lose out. The follower is going to get 3 instead of 4, do you understand, right? So the value of following the leader's advice, conditional on the leader telling the truth, is there, is positive for the follower as well as for the leader, right? So leadership is important. Leaders have to be followed. At least one has to consider following leader's advice. One should not just dismiss leadership as not important, as cheap talk, as self-serving arguments that serve only to enhance the well-being of the leader, him or herself. You understand, right? So leadership is important. However, because the leader is always incentivized to recommend a certain action regardless of the state of nature, and the follower understands it by knowing the payoffs in the game, there is a problem, right? Should the follower really listen to the advice of the leader? Okay, if you sort of study through this slide, which I have no time to go through each and every detail, you'll find that you can sort of find the Nash equilibrium in mixed strategies here, and in particular, you can sort of work out the action of the follower as a function of the follower's beliefs about whether the leader is telling the truth or not. And when you work through the maths on this slide, you'll see that the follower will take advice of the leader, not for all the parameters of the situation, but only for a subset of parameters reflecting the follower's belief in the leader's credibility, in the credibility of the leader's advice, right? But if the follower does not take the leader's advice, then there's a welfare loss because the follower, as well as leaders, as well as the leader, lose out. I hope I've explained the problem of leadership credibility to you. If there are questions, please note them down and ask me later on. So now let's look at the economic solutions to the problem of leadership credibility. So how to make leadership credible? There are three solutions. Well, maybe there are more, but I'm going to be talking about three solutions focusing on leading by example. But I will mention three. So the first one is reputation. So leaders have to create reputation of being knowledgeable, right? And then based on their reputation, their advice will become more and more convincing to the followers, even in the presence of credibility, right? Even in the presence of credibility issues. So I just want to state this without much elaboration. Another interesting solution to the problem of leaders' credibility is what's called leading by sacrifice. Leading by sacrifice is interesting. Let's talk a bit about leading by sacrifice. Imagine going back to the game that I just presented a few slides ago, imagine the state of nature is good. And the leader says, guys, look, the state of nature is good, you have to work hard. The followers say, well, we know that you always have the incentive to say so, so the question is whether we should or shouldn't believe you, Mr. Gore. You know, you tell us to become environmentally aware, how about your business class travel, right? Or how about your super mansion? But no, guys, you know, my business class travel represents absolutely nothing in terms of global emissions, you know. Forgive my business class travels, you know. I was business class traveling to a congress of environmental activists to make the case for environmental protection more loudly heard, right? So okay. Now, what should you do in order to signal credibly to the follower that you mean business when you say that the state of nature is good? You probably have heard of signaling from your earlier microeconomics courses. Have you heard of signaling? Right? What is a signal? So what is the main characteristic of the signal? What makes a signal credible versus not credible? I mean, suppose I come to you and say, look, I'm a super worker, please hire me. Would that convince you? What should the signal be in order to convince people? Credible. What makes a signal credible? When it's costly. How costly? A signal has to be costly enough to make it to be worthwhile, to make sense only at certain state of nature, right? So education is a costly signal in the sense that only smart enough people will find it worth their while to follow education, right? People who are not smart enough will not bother getting education. So that's what makes education a credible signal. You know, if you look at somebody having a certain level of education, you can infer that this person is smarter than a certain threshold, right? How smart, you never know, but smarter than a certain threshold. Okay, so let's try to exploit this idea in the context of leadership. How would you signal that the state of nature is really good? Right? What should your signal be? Right? So far you're telling me about that, you know, how great the state of nature is and why it's very important for you to work hard, but I kind of dismiss it because it's self-serving. Let's go back to slide 66. So that's the situation that illustrates the leader's credibility problem. What should be the cost of the signal? What should be the cost of the signal that the leader has to send to convince the follower that the state of nature is really good? If the state of nature is bad, then the leader will get a pay of 2 if the worker works hard, and a pay of 1 if the worker works easy. So if the state of nature is bad, what is the profit that the leader is going to make from the follower working hard versus follower working easy? What is the profit? What is the gain that the leader is going to get from worker working hard as opposed to working easy?
One.
So this is the pay of two if he works hard, pay of one if he works easy. If he can convince the naive worker to work hard when the state of nature is bad, the leader is going to make a profit of one, right? So if climate change cannot be solved by means that Mr. Gore and Ms. Thunberg advocate, then these guys are going to get a profit of one in terms of greater publicity and better chances for political career in the future. How much should then the leader, what should be the price, what should be the cost of the signal that the leader should send to the follower to totally convince the follower that he means business when he says that the state of nature is good? In other words, how much does the leader have to pay in terms of the cost of the signal to make his information about the state of nature being good credible? Yes, please. Right, exactly. It ha- the price, the cost of the signal of the leader has to be one, right? What happens if the leader sends a signal that has cost half? Will it convince the follower? It's not costly enough, because if he pays, if the leader pays the cost of the signal equal to one half, then if the follower follows his advice when the state of nature is bad, the leader will still make some profit. So what you have to do is you have to send a signal that is costly enough to say, look, I'm not going to make any profit if I lie to you. Ms. Thunberg should say, guys, I am not going to get a job at European Parliament ballot for political position, or, you know, I'm going to retire from public functions and I'm going to, you know, go to protest Fridays for Future. I'm going to write activist pamphlets, but I'm not going to be a politician, right? Or Gore should say, look, you know, I will follow my own advice and live in a one-bedroom flat that is completely sustainable, and I will travel by train or even better by bike. Okay, so that would be a credible signal that would eliminate any profit that the leader could get in case of him lying about the state of nature. Do you understand the logic here? Suppose the leader's payoff in case of bad state and follower working hard would be 20, and the leader's payoff in case of working easy would be 1. So there's 20 and is 1. What should be the signal? What should be the cost of the signal that the leader should send to the follower to convince him? It's going to be cheap talk. It's not going to be sustainable. The leader is going to gain if the problem is really serious, if the state of nature is good, then the leader is going to make a profit of at most 3. If you are going to pay the cost of the signal equal to 19, it's self-defeating. So it's not 19. In the example that I just came up with, it's going to be cheap talk and nobody will talk about it. Nobody will take care, right? So if the leader sends a signal costing 3 monetary units, that would exhaust his profit in case of good state of nature, that's not going to convince the follower, and the leader is not going to waste resources on doing that. I mean, well done applying this logic, but you have to put this logic in a broader strategic concept, right? In a broader strategic context, yeah? So the price of the signal has to be at least the difference between the leader's payoff in bad state, but it has to be at most the difference in the leader's payoff in good state to make it worthwhile. Right? It doesn't make sense to send a signal worth 19 million euros if the profit that you're going to get in the good state of nature is 3. What's the point? That's something I thought would be interesting to illustrate. Okay, so that's leading by sacrifice. What's the problem with leading by sacrifice? I mean, think of leading by sacrifice as sending a costly signal that is not productive. I mean, if Ms. Thunberg says, I'm not going to ballot for a political party, that's kind of unproductive because, you know, she is a smart girl. She would probably, if she would get a bit more education, she would probably make a good politician, you know. She's interesting. And I think if she commits herself to absolutely taking no stakes in the future climate-related politics, I think it's going to be lost for us, right? So for as a society, I mean, why would a motivated, knowledgeable person, well, okay, with a bit weird position to my taste, but still, you know, let all flowers bloom, no? Leading by sacrifice is wasteful, right? So because people commit to a costly action that doesn't have any economic gain beyond sending a costly signal that the leader means business. So leading by sacrifice is a bit wasteful, right? So think about throwing a party for the sake of communicating something. Surely there are some more economically efficient way of convincing the follower that the leader means business. And that takes us to the next topic, which is leading by example. And this is going to be a big issue in the leadership literature. So I think we're going to talk about leading by example for pretty much the rest of the lecture. Here's the simplest mathematical model that kind of sets the scene for leading by example. So leading by example, that's what Gandhi did, right? So he didn't just buy a lot of British taxed salt and burnt it at some point, right? Saying, guys, I don't need this salt, you know, we can go in the sea. No, he went to the sea himself, got the water, evaporated it under hot Indian sun, and said, look, this is salt, you know, help yourselves. That's leading by example. This is when the leader themselves take action that they advise the rest of the people to take, right? So Miss Thunberg leads by example by not only calling impressionable young people to protest against government's inaction to tackle climate change, but she actually goes to protest himself. So that's leading by example. Right, Miss Thunberg says we should travel economically. I mean, she travels very, very environmentally friendly to the many, many conferences that she used to travel when she was younger. Right, never mind flying her crew by multiple airplanes and having being flown back on the way from the United Nations Climate Conference. Never mind, that's okay. Right, leading by example is very important. Here's a little model. So this is really public goods game, right? So I'm sure you've seen it before. So you've got a bunch of N individuals, including the leader. So imagine Gandhi and the rest of the population of India. They each supply effort at the cost of, well, at the quadratic costs of effort. The cost of abstaining from buying British salt and, you know, going to the sea to get their own salt is costly, right? So, and the output in terms of political kind of signal, in terms of political protest, in terms of higher chance of going independent and having this tax on salt taken away, this is the output that they create, right? So the output is the sum of individual effort and the multiplier, there's a multiplier on that, the multiplier theta on that, reflecting complementarities between reflecting synergies between individual outputs, right? Then the output gets shared equally. So Gandhi and company share the output equally. Theta between 0 and 1. Yeah, it's just a multiple. It's a multiple, right? So it reflects synergies or positive or negative synergies in the output, right? So, I mean, if you protest against the Brits, then your protest may or may not be successful. So that's what this theta does, right? And then whatever output you create will be split equally between Gandhi and company. So the individual payoff is equal to the output that everybody creates collectively times the expected value of the shock theta, divided by the entire population minus individual quadratic costs of action. Okay, so what's the key component here? The key component here is this. Nobody knows what theta is. Nobody knows how successful or unsuccessful political protest in India against the Brits is going to be. And here comes Gandhi and says, guys, I know that theta is very high, so you have to protest more actively. Right? So without the leader, so suppose there's no Gandhi, people have their beliefs about whether their individual protest and collective protest will be successful. So based on their beliefs, they each are going to make individual choices about to what extent they should protest against the oppression. Right? So, and well, It goes without saying that the Nash equilibrium in this public goods game is going to be inefficient, right? So the Nash equilibrium effort is going to be expected theta divided by the number, divided by the size of the group. You can verify this by taking the first order condition of this individual payoff to convince yourself. However, it doesn't take a genius of economics to work out that the economically efficient effort provision is going to be not expected theta by n, but just expected theta. So in other words, the society as a whole, the group of n guys as a whole, would be best off when each would supply expected theta. However, because they like to free ride on each other, they will supply a lot less. Do you understand? This is classical public goods game. If you haven't learned it earlier, please do, because it's elementary economics. Now, yes, here comes Gandhi, here comes the leader, and says, guys, I know the true theta. You know, I've spoken to very knowledgeable people. I had a divine revelation, whatever his story is. He comes and says, guys, the theta is actually theta hat. That's what the leader says. The theta, I have a certain information which suggests that the chance of our success is theta hat. All right? So, but will the leader actually tell that the theta hat is equal to theta? Why? Why not? Let's see. Let's look at the individual payoff of the leader. So the individual payoff of the leader is equal to the true value of theta that is known to him. Okay? Do you understand why there's no difference, why there's just theta rather than expected theta? The followers don't know the true theta, so they use expectation. The leader knows the true theta. That's why it's the true theta. Okay? And the question is, will the leader communicate the true theta? Will Gandhi communicate the true chance of success? Will Al Gore communicate the true danger of climate change? Will Greta Thunberg communicate the true effects of climate protests on political decision-making regarding climate change? Well, economic theory says no. Why? Because the leader's individual payoff increases in the signal that the leader communicates. Understand the difference between the truth and the communication. Theta hat is communication. Theta is the truth. Now, what will be the incentive of the leader? Will the leader communicate the true theta, or will the leader communicate something that is bigger than the true theta? Well, he doesn't care about the rest of the people. He cares about his own payoff, right? And his own payoff increases in the signal that he communicates. So you're essentially right. I would take one point from your exam answer by saying that the leader also takes into account the bigger payoffs given to the other guys. No, the leader doesn't. Not in this model. It's clear that the leader has an incentive to communicate theta hat that's bigger than the true theta. And think about it. Media have every incentive to be alarmist, right? Because, you know, if you have a heading like neutral sounding heading, then, you know, how many clicks will you get? But if you have a heading in big, huge letters saying we're approaching an environmental catastrophe, then you're going to have a lot of clicks. Okay, so this scaremongering is called scaremongering, right? So I'm not saying that every media is lying or exaggerating things. No, I don't want to make any kind of statements that go beyond the realm of my expertise, right? But what I am saying is that, theoretically speaking, every leader has... Are you interested in my lecture? Come in. No? Okay, then see you later. Okay, so leader will have an incentive to say that the state of nature is better than it actually is. I think I kind of mathematically convinced you of that. How to solve this problem? Well, you can always lead by sacrifice. You can always send a signal. You can always send a signal that would be at least as high as the leader's profit between the difference of the true and the communicated theta hat, right? So leading by sacrifice will solve this problem. But as we said, leading by sacrifice is a bit wasteful. So what's the alternative? The alternative is leading by example. So what should the leader, what is the effort that the leader should choose? Now, if you take the first order conditions of the leader's effort, right? So if you take, so the leader's own effort is EL. Let's differentiate the leader's individual payoff with respect to EL, right? So this is trivially one. This is less interesting, this is more interesting because the follower's effort is a function of not only the signal of the leader, but also the actual effort by the leader, right? So when you take the derivative, you'll see that the first order condition on the leader's effort is the derivative of the benefit, and the marginal cost of the leader's effort is just EL, thanks to this quadratic effort function. If you differentiate it with respect to EL, you're just going to have EL. What we do, we don't assume this. It actually follows that if the follower sees the leader working harder, it has an effect on the followers. It has a positive effect on the follower's effort. Why? Because why would the leader work harder if what he's saying is not true? Right? So the only thing that we, the only ingredient that we need for leading by example to work is the effort of the rest of the guys to be a positive function of the effort of the leader, right? And it's true, both theoretically and empirically, right? You know, when you have celebrities advocating a certain action, environmental or public health or mental health, or you know, you have these people taking action that is that speaks in accordance to what they preach, right? So you have Elton John, my currently favorite pop artist, presiding over Elton John AIDS Foundation, right? So, and you know, he spends lots of money on measures related to countering AIDS as a public health issue, right? And he has a personal interest in that because in his autobiographical book, Me, he writes about losing a lot of friends through AIDS when AIDS was not really diagnosed treated properly, right? So this is just one example of followers' effort, followers' attention, followers' kind of action towards the leader's advice being a positive function of the leader action themselves. You understand, right? This is why the derivative of the everyone else's effort with respect to the leader's effort is going to be positive, right? So that's your leading by example, right? And the efforts, the leader's effort, you can see that if you take comparative static on this expression, the leader's effort increases with the true state of nature. So the higher theta is, the harder the leader works, right? The harder the leader works, the harder the follower works. And that's welfare improving. Why? Because remember that the Nash equilibrium effort without leadership is expected theta over n. But when there is a leader leading by example, the expected effort is going to be bigger than Nash equilibrium. So the presence of the leader leading by example is welfare improving because it moves the individual effort towards action from the inefficient Nash equilibrium to a more efficient level. Now, the next question is, of course, is leading by example going to bring us to welfare maximizing effort level, right? So is leading by example going to bring us to the effort level eta, to the effort level expected theta, which is welfare improving? And the answer is not. The answer is no. Why? Because the followers understand that part of the reason why the leader is working hard is because of the effect of the follower's effort on the leader's payoff, right? So the followers say, okay, why is this guy working so hard? You know, why is this public figure so active about a certain cause, right? Part of the reason is because the importance of this cause is very high. That's part of the reason. But another part of the reason is because, you know, they want to stimulate us into the action which benefits the leader themselves, all right? So this is why leading by example in this model is not is going to improve things in comparison to Nash equilibrium effort, but it's not going to bring us all the way to the welfare maximizing payoff. What can we do about it? So that's basically what this slide is talking about, right? So the solution to make leading by example welfare maximizing is to redistribute the shares in the total output by reducing the leader's share to bring the follower's effort closer to leaders. Let's see what happens. Now, I'm not going to present this problem at the lecture, but we're going to have a tutorial where we derive this result, right? But for now, I just want to signal you, I want to draw your attention to a classical paper by Benjamin Hermelin about the theory of leadership from which leading by example and leading by sacrifice models presented in this lecture are coming from. Now, this paper is not compulsory reading, but you are strongly recommended to check it out. But just for now, in the lecture, I'm telling you that if you reallocate the output so as to disadvantage the leader and give more output to the followers, then the leading by example as a practice will bring you the fully efficient effort, right? Now, whether it will be in the interest of the leader or not remains an open issue, but Gandhi, for example, could say, guys, let's protest against the Brits, but if we succeed, I undertake not to become the prime minister. You know, if he can commit to this course of action by reducing his share in the proceeds from the public action that he instigates, then people will start protesting even harder because they will believe that the leader really means it and the leader has exhausted every potential personal gain from exploiting people's lack of awareness. Okay? If you don't immediately understand what I'm talking about, it's not too bad. Read the slides a couple more times, and if you still don't understand, write your questions down and ask me. Okay? So far, I haven't heard a single question from you. Like, I haven't, well, I have, but like detailed things. Let me take this opportunity to remind you that I am all ears, right? And if you have questions or any other feedback on the course, please let me know. You know my email, you know where I sit, you know my name. If you don't understand something, let's talk and let's make it super clear. So let's move on in the lecture and talk about the difference between leading by sacrifice and leading by example. And that will bring us to the end of the lecture. There's a guy called John Maxwell, and he wrote a modestly titled book. You know, I absolutely love this trash. Okay, he said ironically, right? So he wrote this book called The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. Wow. Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. Check him out. It's one of those, you know, econometrics for dummies or leadership for dummies yellow books, right? So, no, it's not the same series, but it's kind of... But he's certainly a thought leader. You know, his books are selling by millions, and I'm sure that he would command more opinions, the opinions of more people than my humble lecture, right? Even though I can't pretend to have 21 irrefutable laws of leadership. So what he says, a leader must give up to go up. What does it mean? It means that the leader has to sacrifice. So if the leader wants to be a convincing leader, if the leader wants people to follow their advice, they have to sacrifice. All right? So, and the broader argument, the broader idea is, well, maybe you should do both, you know, leading by example and leading by sacrifice. Maybe leading by example and leading by sacrifice are one thing and the same. Because surely when you lead by example, you take costly effort. And your costly effort is actually higher than the optimal in your situation. So kind of you sacrifice by working too hard compared to your individual payoff maximizing effort level, right? So in other words, there is a bit of both in leadership behavior, leading by sacrifice as well as leading by example, right? So there's no success without sacrifice. Leaders have to sacrifice more than others. You must keep up, keep giving up to stay up. The higher the level of leadership, the greater the sacrifice, right? So people of higher leadership position, they sacrifice their personal comforts. Yeah. Mr. Gore and his mansions. Right, but they do sacrifice personal comforts. You know, their private life becomes more exposed. You know, they are more in the limelight, in the focus of attention. It can take toll on people. You know, think about all these countless celebrities who, like Britney Spears, for example, who got propelled to the public limelight, and then they had issues dealing with the fame that befell them. Leaders are in this position when they lead by example and lead by sacrifice at the same time. Here's a clipping from a very reputable journal of applied psychology where they talk about leading by sacrifice and leading by example. So there's the point I want to make in this bunch of slides is that leading by sacrifice and leading by example, they kind of come together. They occur almost at the same time. Now, the big question for us, the economists, is why would leaders choose to lead by sacrifice and lead by example at the same time? We know, we've learned that leading by sacrifice is essentially wasteful, right? So why would you send a costly signal just to convince the follower that you mean business, right? Shouldn't you better lead by example, possibly reallocating the shares in total output to make your leading by example even more convincing? Why do you need to lead by sacrifice as well as lead by example? But I'm not sure that this is an answer to the question, right? It's a kind of restatement of the observation that we made. It's a valuable restatement, you know. It makes sense. So people lead by example and by sacrifice at the same time. But the question is, why do they combine something productive with something wasteful? Usually you want to do something, usually you don't want to do wasteful thing, you want to do productive thing. Why do you do both productive and wasteful thing? Your answer was, well, you want to send the signal. But surely you can send the signal by leading by example as well as leading by sacrifice. Why don't you send the signal by leading by example, which is a lot less wasteful because you create some output? So leading by sacrifice sends a stronger signal, right? You agree with that as well? Okay. Yeah, well, I can see where you're coming from. But in the models of leadership that we have considered so far, there's none, right? So leading, look, in the model of leading by sacrifice, so it wasn't really a model as such, but leading by sacrifice, you send a signal costing you one, and that kind of eliminates any selfish motive of the leader, right? So that's a convincing, strong signal. Okay. Now, but when you do leading by example in this model, right, you choose an effort level that is informative of the true state of nature, right? So in terms of informativeness of the effort level in leading by example and informativeness of the signal, of the costly signal that the leader sends, both strategies are equally informative. So I don't see why leading by sacrifice sends a stronger signal in these theoretical models. It's true that leading by sacrifice is more costly, but costlier signal is not necessarily more informative. Remember, costlier signal is not necessarily more informative. Let's go back to this leading by sacrifice problem, you know. So suppose the leader, instead of sending signal one, costing one, the leader sends a signal costing 1.5. Would this be a convincing signal? Would this signal convince the follower that the state of nature is good? Yes, really, I'm sorry. Yes, because if the state of nature is bad, the profit that the leader can make is one. So if the follower gets convinced by the leader that the state of the nature is good and works hard, then the leader will get a pay of two, But if the follower does not listen, the leader will get a pay of one. So if the state of nature is bad, the profit that the leader can make is maximum one, right? And if he sends a signal that takes this profit away, the signal is convincing, right? So let me repeat the question. If the leader sends a signal costing one, will it convince the follower? Yes. If the leader sends a signal costing 1.5, will it convince the follower? If the leader sends a signal costing 2.75, will it convince the follower? I said that the signal costing 19 units is not in the leader's interest. Because if the cost of the signal is 19, the leader will send no signal, will choose to send no signal, and then it will be cheap talk. Signal costing 19 is no cheap talk. Okay, once again, let's concentrate. We're on the right track. So, signal costing 1. Will signal costing 1 convince the follower that the state of nature is good and that the leader is telling the truth?
Yes.
Why? The leader's profit. If the state of nature is bad.
Yes.
So, if the leader lies to the follower, he will get no gain from this lying. Okay? So signal costing 1 is credible. Is signal costing 1.5 credible? Yes. Which signal is more credible? The signal costing 1.5 or the signal costing 1? Both signals are equally credible. You don't need to send more expensive signal because, you know, why would you? You can, but it's a waste of resources. I mean, signaling is a waste of resources already, but at least you want to minimize the waste of resources. See what I mean? You're not going to sound more convincing by sending signals that are costlier than a certain minimum. You want to send a signal costing 1, maybe 1 and a tiny, tiny, tiny little bit, like 1 plus some epsilon approaching 0, right? But sending signals like 1.5, 2, 2.7 is really, really a bad idea. Is totally irrational, is not what leaders do, right? Because it profits no one, including the leader, including the follower. Back to this very interesting discussion that we had, you know? So you had leading by sacrifice and leading by example, and I think the point of discussion was, well, leading by sacrifice was arguably more convincing than leading by example. And I am kind of struggling with this. I don't think that there's a difference in credibility of leading by sacrifice versus leading by example as kind of signals. You know, in terms of credibility, both signals are equally credible. It's true, though, and I think that's where part of the confusion may have come from. It's true, though, that when you lead by example, you don't get the follower to do the optimal action, whereas when you lead by sacrifice, you may. But then the answer to this is that if you reallocate the shares in the total output, then leading by example will work just as fine as leading by sacrifice. One plus epsilon to eliminate the profit, right? Anything more is waste of money, right? Anything more is waste of money. You can send a signal. You can send a signal more than one. You can, sure, but why would you? Actually, the answer to this question, why leaders combine leading by sacrifice and leading by example, is that the mathematical models of leadership that we considered so far in the lecture cannot answer this question. Both leading by sacrifice and leading by example are equally convincing. And leading by example is more productive than leading by sacrifice. So the Hermelin model of leadership would imply that people should only lead by example and forget about leading by sacrifice. In reality, we see that leading by sacrifice and leading by example are combined. So, the reason why leaders combine leading by sacrifice and leading by example is because leading by sacrifice is more visible than leading by example. Greta Thunberg, my hero of today's lecture. My true hero, of course, is Alexei Navalny, who got killed by the Russian government in prison. let's talk about Navalny a little bit. You know, I was born in Russia. I don't consider myself Russian, but I still kind of check the place out from time to time. Navalny, you probably heard about him, haven't you? Right? Is he a leader? Well, he is a leader to many, many people, right? So have you heard of him or not? Or shall we talk about Greta Thunberg? Who do you want to talk about, Navalny or Thunberg? Who do you want to talk about? Okay, let's talk about Greta Thunberg, more famous. Okay, good. So Greta Thunberg, she goes and protests against the inaction of government and complicity of oil companies in the non-solving climate change problem, right? Is my understanding of her action correct? Okay, so she can go protest or she can go violent protest. Now, if she goes violent protest, she will get locked up. And she has been brought to police a couple of times, I think, right? So she didn't get locked up, but she, you know, she put herself in serious danger of being locked up, basically, right? Now, was it strategic or accidental? We cannot be sure. All right, but your knowledge of leadership from this lecture would advise you, putting herself in the danger of being locked up is leading by sacrifice or leading by example? Leading by sacrifice. I mean, you don't want to send an example that you should be locked up or detained by the police. You want to send an example that you should go and protest against all bad and for the sake of all good, right? So that's an example. But when you let yourself be detained by the police and maybe even locked up or put in prison, all right, that's not leading by example, that's leading by sacrifice, okay? So why would some public leaders not stop and continue at the danger, at the very serious danger of being locked up? I mean, Nelson Mandela, another leader, you know Nelson Mandela? How long has he spent in prison? 27 years. 27 flipping years, right? So that's not leading by example. It's very bloody well leading by sacrifice, no? So leaders combine leading by example and leading by sacrifice. Why would they do that? It's not productive. One advantage of leading by sacrifice, and that will kind of leads us to conclusion of this lecture. One advantage of leading by sacrifice is that leading by sacrifice is more visible, right? So when you lead by example, by encouraging people to protest, by writing articles to newspapers explaining your point of view, by, you know, by recording TikTok videos or YouTube videos explaining your position, it's leading by example. It's cool. It's great. But there are lots of YouTube and TikTok videos, and there are lots of protests and protesters, right? So you kind of don't look very visible on this very motley background, no? But when you get yourself in real legal trouble through activism, that's leading by sacrifice, and that's very visible. See what I mean? Do you understand what I'm talking about? Do you have any questions? Makes sense, no? Right? So leading by sacrifice is wasteful. You know, getting yourself thrown to jail for the sake of your cause is wasteful. And yet, leaders sometimes do that because it's more visible. And being more visible, it amplifies the signal that they send. So another issue here is that when you lead by example, we have seen that leading by example is not fully welfare maximizing, right? So leading by example does not provoke the welfare maximizing effort of the members in the team. Unless you reallocate the shares, unless the leader promises not to exercise any political function in case of protest being successful, right? So there's always this issue about how really credible this leading by example is, right? But leading by sacrifice, if the sacrifice is costly enough, but not more costly than that, is fully credible, and as such, it restores the welfare maximizing effort much, much easier and quicker. Okay, so that's why both leading by example and leading by sacrifice, that's why both these models are practiced. We have quite a few more slides, but of course we will not study them all. Instead, what we're going to do is we're going to study who becomes leader and further elaboration on leading by example at the tutorial that will happen next week. Okay? For now, let's stop this lecture. If there are any questions, you're welcome to approach me. If not, I'll see you online next week. Tutorial will be online. And please, once again, if you have any feedback, any questions, do let me know. If you give me your feedback more like towards the end of the course, when course evaluations are usually done, there isn't much that I can do to change your experience for the better. If you act earlier, then there's more chance that we can improve the course together. So please keep me posted of your questions and concerns if you have any. Thanks for your attention. See you next time.